listeners, would-be Toastmasters, listeners and friends, you're very welcome to the Talk Show for Talkers here again on irishtalkers.com. We do love to hear from you, so please do send your emails to info@irishtalkers.com. You can find us on the interweb as the Irish Talkers, not the, just as irishtalkers.com, where you can listen to our archive for the last 9 years, because we're in season 10. My name is Maura O'Brien, and I'm actually not here. I'm talking to you from the editing suite, but I'm going to hand you over to the irrepressible Paul O'Mahony and the irresistible James Finnegan for today's show. Over to you, boys.
You know, James, I had a really interesting time this morning. I met up with a Toastmaster for a cup of coffee. And in fact, we stayed chatting much longer than I think either of us expected. And he was telling me that he was cutting back on the amount of time he was spending in Toastmasters clubs for a very interesting reason. He said he thought he was picking up some bad habits, and that some of the habits which he was picking up at his own local club meeting were reducing his effectiveness at work. And this was something that puzzled me. So he teased it out a bit. And in a nutshell, what he said was that all the dramatic gestures and body language and storytelling that is so encouraged, I'm quoting him now, in Toastmasters, doesn't go down in his workplace at all. He does an awful lot of online presentations, doesn't do very many face-to-face meetings, but he's at work building a career. Well, 9 to 5, he probably does more than 9 to 5. He certainly travels around the place a lot in his job. But we only had enough time to scratch the surface of it. But I don't know, have you ever had the feeling that a lot of what you would learn by seeing people doing, more by seeing people doing it in Toastmasters, wouldn't be immediately applicable to you if you were working in a corporate job?
It's interesting you say that, Paul, because my attitude to all these things is that there are different techniques that we learn as we go through, and I'll speak about this later on. The techniques we learn, for example, at a Toastmasters meeting, are the listening skills, the explanations, the evaluations, the presentation skills. But the actual skill is picking the right technique for the right approach. As I've said many times before, my parents ran a pub in London. And at that time in London, pubs were split into two different bars. There was the saloon bar, which had a carpet and was slightly more refined. And then there was the public bar, which had the pool table, the darts table, and if you may term, the more physical workers. But Mum and Dad had an attitude that everyone was treated exactly the same. It didn't matter whether you were an Oscar winner or the fella digging up the road outside. Everyone was treated the same. I find it interesting that your friend, colleague, our colleague, found it an inhibitor to their workplace practices. Because what I have always found is that Toastmasters is a wonderful petri dish to try out different techniques and different skills. Are they all absolutely applicable to the workplace? Maybe not exactly, but near enough. And I'd be very disappointed to hear of a member feeling that they had to cut back on their Toastmasters commitment because they couldn't utilize all the skills all the time in a work environment. Yes, I think we've all had a crash course in online presentations these past few years, and I don't think those skills are going to go away. I would suggest that it's just a case of maybe just taking a wee break for a while and seeing what works for you and what works for the company and what works for your workmates.
Well, I'm not here really to and I wasn't even there this morning to come up with any solution, but I was trying to understand the how you can transmit or transfer things you learn at in Toastmasters to work. Mostly at work, this person and many others are called on to give presentations where they are required to present a lot of information, and they are not required to motivate people to do things. They're more present things which can then be discussed and analyzed and passed around the table and collegiate decisions made face to face. But certainly you don't experience many presentations or prepared speeches in Toastmasters which are top heavy with information. And frankly, they're usually 5 to 7 minutes long, and presentations at work can be quite a lot longer than that. I wouldn't have found it very unusual to have had to sit through a 30-minute presentation by a manager about some part of the business. When I used to work in a corporate job, and so what was fascinating was that after this conversation finished, I went away and I thought, well, what am I going to talk about today on this podcast? So I found an article called How to Transport the Skills You Learn Well at Toastmasters. And it's by Victor David, who's the immediate past president of City Tattersall's Toastmasters Club in Sydney. And it's in this month's Toastmaster magazine. And I highly recommend it, because it starts off by highlighting that for many, the storytelling skills and the motivational techniques that we learn, they're not really what you can use very much in work. But if you find yourself unable to, for example, tell a story, it's a very good thing to start your presentation with saying why the meeting is important. And that will draw people's attention at the beginning of your presentation to the relevance of them staying awake or paying attention to what they're about to hear. And a second thing that Victor recommends is that you would early on in your presentation, this is part of setting the scene for what you're going to communicate, that you'll outline to people, this is what you're going to learn from the presentation that I'm about to give you. So you engage people with things that aren't personal stories, but there's another way of making everything that's going to come make sense. And he goes on also in this article to talk about the relevance of eye contact. And he has a suggestion in it that in work, you obviously don't want to be looking into the far distance while you're giving a presentation to your colleagues. But you can, if you're in a face-to-face presentation in a room, you can address one half of the room in relation to, let's say, question one, and the other half, question two. But so that you are continuously finding a way of hooking people's attention and varying things as you go along. He also puts a lot of emphasis in this article on the benefits of using pauses at work to achieve emphasis. And in Toastmasters meetings, we often see people using a declamatory style, grand statements made as if you were talking to, a huge audience or something like that. And fair enough, that may be very useful to do if you're speaking at a conference, for sake of argument. But if you're presenting around a table with anywhere between 6 and 12 people maximum in the room, they'll look at you askance and think there's, what did you have for breakfast this morning? But degrees of vocal variety, like speaking softly, speaking quietly, speaking slowly at different points in order to emphasize the importance of that particular bit of your presentation, I thought the article is well worth considering by anybody who has the same challenge that the Toastmaster I was with this morning has, which is, how on earth am I going to take this into work? The last thing, really, I've seen very few presentations in Toastmasters, in prepared speeches, we'll say, where people have actually said, I'm going to rehearse a presentation that I'm going to give next week at work. And I think, well, a lot of the people who I meet in Toastmasters do have a job. They do have a job. And there are some clubs in which all the people have quite serious, you know, big jobs, where I'm quite certain they will be doing presentations during the week, but I still don't see them practicing it in the Toastmasters Club, and I wonder why. So, listeners, I recommend this article. And I'm going to bring it to the attention. Well, I've done it already, actually. Bring it to the attention of the person I had breakfast with, and we'll see where the discussion about this issue goes.
Well, that's wonderful, Paul, and it'll be interesting to know if any of our listeners have any comments or views themselves.
Well, I think we better consider what sort of emotion. You see, at work, you don't use your emotions all that much when you're doing a straightforward presentation. You're presenting the facts, a little bit of enthusiasm, but you'd seldom get elated at work. You'd seldom get really excited, because that's a bit like going over the top. So that's why I thought I'd bring this word elated up as our word of the week this week, to be very happy or to be proud, to be jubilant, or to be in high spirits. That's what the word elated means, E-L-A-T-E-D, elated. And
it's a wonderful word, Paul, and I think the world would be a better place if we were elated more often.
Well, that's a good, very good point. I wouldn't half mind to be elated myself a bit more often, overjoyed. I don't know if I've ever been overjoyed. Have you ever been overjoyed, James?
Oh, yes, Paul. Yes, and I make it my business to be overjoyed, and I make it my business to look on the positive side of things, because there are wonderful things happening out there. There's an awful lot of people would be delighted to have our problems. An awful lot of people who are staring now, even as we speak, at the ceiling of a hospital ward, who'd be delighted to have our difficulties. I think you sometimes have to dig deep to find the elation. But at the end of the day, do you ever sit down and say, well, this was a great thing that happened to me today, or this was a good event? There's a friend of mine in Australia called Victor Purton, who has the best job title I've ever come across. He's the chief executive officer of the Center for Optimism. And what he prescribes or suggests is that, for example, if I ask you and meet you in the street and say, how are you? What's your immediate response?
Often it is, have you enough time for me to tell you?
Generally speaking, most people say, I'm grand, and you keep walking on. But what Victor asks people is, what's the best thing that's happened to you today? Now, it could be as simple as taking your grandkids to school. It could be as simple as finding a parking spot right outside the post office, just where you needed it. Isn't that a different way of framing things and looking at things? What's the best thing that's happened to you today?
Yes, I think that's a really good way of thinking about it. When I use the word overjoyed, by the way, I was taking the word literally, which is overjoyed, which is a bit like to have too much joy. And I was thinking to myself, well, I wondered if you'd ever experienced, and it really was a rhetorical question, I suppose, have you ever experienced a superfluity of too much joy, just too much, right? That it, and I, but I guess it's a bit like being too elated, too ecstatic, too much of anything can be not so good for you. But the word elated, it might indeed be a useful word if you were trying to exaggerate a bit, but communicate how pleased you were about something, even a speech somebody has given.
Yeah, I think elated comes more in a group context. For example, if your team win and you're in the stadium, that is a spirit of elation. Sometimes when you listen to a piece of music that is just played so sublimely, you can feel elated. If you see an Olympic record broken, you're elated, or at least you are until the drugs test comes in. You know, elation can be found, but sometimes you just have to dig a little deeper for it.
And the last word in relation to elated, you might be interested to know that the opposite of elated, in other words, the antonym of elated, is dejected. So there we are, two words, elated and dejected.
Well, if you follow the teams I follow, Paul, you're used to the phrase dejected as well. It's interesting that Paul is in such a philosophical mood this edition, because I am too. We're at a stage in the year where we're coming towards the end of our various terms of office, or even just the end of the Toastmaster year. And I'm starting to reflect on how I've done as a district officer, as a club officer. I'm reminded of the words of the great philosopher Joey Tribbiani from the television series Friends. How you doing? Well, I feel like I'm doing much like the man who jumps out of the plane. So far, so good. So far, so good. So far, so good. I truly believe that leadership is a process of self-development. I'm not convinced that leadership can be taught, not unless you need to be willing and able to learn how to lead. And how do we know how to lead? Sometimes it's from examples. I have been extraordinarily fortunate to meet and work with and learn from different types of leaders across a whole range of disciplines and styles. In the artistic world, in drama, in music, and I always remember that a conductor of an orchestra or the conductor of a choir always does his work with his back to the audience. In the world of sport, I've worked with world champions, national champions, and Olympic medalists of every hue. And sometimes, in the darkness of the night, they sit down and they have to work out, are they going to qualify? Are they on the right path? What do they need to do to improve? I've also worked with politicians and community leaders, CEOs of businesses, far greater than you can might imagine. But who tells them how to improve? Who do they go to ask where they went wrong? Paul was talking earlier about a friend he'd met who was having trouble putting the skills and disciplines he's learned in Toastmasters into a work environment. But as Toastmasters, the art and practice of evaluations, of supported and constructive feedback, is, I believe, so central to our ethos of learning by doing, by listening, and thereby improving. I've taken some of the self-evaluations and the forms that are now available on the Toastmaster website, and they're very helpful. I think the best form of feedback is the 360 degrees group feedback. What you need is people to be honest with you, not tell you what you feel you want to hear. They need to be able to say to you, you could have done this better, or I like the way you did that. Did you think of doing it this way? The hard thing is to get enough numbers in these 360 feedbacks to make it a very worthwhile exercise. There's a wonderful expression in Ireland, show your grand. And that covers everything from being a mass murderer to being an exemplar leader in society. Really grab those 360 degree forms, though, and hand them out and demand that they send them back to you. Keep chasing for them. The larger the group of feedback, the better the number of participants, the more information you have to deal with. The real nub of the question, the real core idea that you need to know is to how can you improve? How can you be better? If we improve 100 things by 1%, that's 100% improvement. So rather than go for the drastic big change, get those little nuances, those little things that make a difference. I'm reminded of an athlete who was going for Olympic glory in 4 years. And they realized that they would have to knock down their best ever time by a whole minute, which sounds a lot. But then if you spread that minute over 4 years, and then over 12 months, and then over 1 month, 4 weeks, 1 week, you break it down into those small, manageable goals, and you can show a steady improvement. However, the person who can give you the most honest answer, the person who can tell you the truth, although you might not like to hide it, to hear it, is the person staring back at you from the bathroom mirror. If you cannot be honest with yourself, who will you be honest to? Look back, and what were your aims at the start of this year? What did you hope to do? My favorite WWW. What worked well? Ask yourself the question, what would you do differently if you were starting today? And write down the three things you've learnt about the job, about the role, about yourself. There's a wonderful coaching expression from a friend of mine, Liam Moggan, called TED Pie. Tell me, explain to me, describe to me, precisely, in detail, exactly. And if you are that honest with yourself, if you can drill down into your aims and aspirations and achievements, because there are always achievements. Hey, if nothing else, you survived the year. I think that next year, you'll be even better. And if you approach a different role, you'll be even better. And if someone should tap you gently on the shoulder and suggest that you might like to raise your sights higher to a greater purpose, you will achieve even more, even better. Here endeth the lesson. Thank you for your attention.
Well, thank you for that, James.
That's it for today. I hope you enjoyed the show. We'll be back next week with an interview, and we look forward to seeing you then. So from Paul Imani, from James Finnegan, and from myself, Moira O'Brien, bye for now. See you next week.